With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Hello and welcome to the Mile High Hockey Lab. It sounded like the intro song, just like, you know, on the record machine when they turn it to the slower speed. That's what our intro sounded like for a second there. This is Adrian Hernandez of the Mile High Hockey Lab. We are going to talk Colorado Avalanche hockey. We have more than a few topics to cover today, to include previewing potential playoff matchups, rehashing our bold predictions from last week, see if we can crown any bold prediction winners. I don't know. I don't think we had any, but we'll find out. And a couple of other things in regards to just how the Central Division is going to shape up for the Colorado Avalanche. So let's get right into our first segment. And I titled it, Are the Avalanche on the Road to a Repeat? And I want to add a little context to that title. Last week, Jared Bednar mentioned that it's, and not to quote him too closely, these aren't quotes, but to paraphrase, he essentially said that this Colorado Avalanche team is going to have to win a Stanley Cup in a different form than last year's club, just given their makeup. And I'll start with you, Jackie K. First off, thank you for joining me today.
Hello.
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear.
Good.
So, to you, first of all, how did you take those comments from Jared Bednar? And secondly, what to you does it mean for the Avalanche to win a different way? What kind of way of winning is that?
I thought the conversation was interesting. That was actually one of the few pieces from Bednar that we've been able to hear over the last week or so. And it was a conversation on that the depth is different. And I think it was interesting that he admitted it. Like, he basically said that the team was stacked last year and they don't have that kind of team anymore. And so, like I said, it was interesting that he admitted it. So I think what that means is, and it is funny because this week we have seen some depth scoring, so it does still happen, but I just think, can't rely on it as much. And I think they're going to have to be even defensively better than they were last year, just because they won't be able to outscore deficits as much. So that's kind of how I took his comments.
What about you, Evan? And Evan, thank you for joining me today.
Of course. Of course. Well, I mean, I put this hat on for a reason, because they are on the road to a repeat. At least I would think so anyway. And, you know, as Jackie kind of already touched on, it is pretty crazy that Bednar did just straight up admit it. And, you know, we know it's different this year, right? That's kind of just been how it's been. We've just been knowing that it's going to be different. You don't have an Andre Burakovsky or an Nazem Kadri. And then on top of that, you have all of these injuries that are going on, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, to do it in a different way will be beneficial for sure. And like you said, we already got the depth scoring this week, the last couple of games. Right. I was almost there on my bold prediction, which you can get to later. But
me too. Man. But yeah, get that later.
Yeah, I think, I mean, being close on your bold prediction is pretty awesome, considering last week's bold predictions I felt like were pretty bold indeed. So, and then like Jacob's, I'll just say it now, his couldn't have been right because JoJo never got a start because Frankie came back. So he's going to get off scot-free in this week's version of bold predictions. But yeah, so I agree with both of you. I feel like, and Jackie, I agree with you that it was more than anything an interesting conversation, and kind of interesting to see and hear Bednar kind of acknowledge what, I wouldn't say it's the elephant in the room, but it's like we all know that this team is different than last year's team. And I especially thought it was interesting that he said it's a dangerous game to compare the two of them, and that, you know, last year's team doesn't come around a lot. So basically he's acknowledging that just the makeup of the roster itself was deeper. Like you said, there's a little bit more depth to last year's roster. I think, though, the difference and where I could see them winning in a different way could come on the back of some more stout goaltending than we've seen in previous playoffs past. Jackie, what do you think? Is Gorgiev an upgrade in net, or do we still not know until the postseason comes around? If you feel that way, why or why not?
I would say yes, but that's a good point that you make, that the proof will be in the pudding in the postseason. Mm-hmm. But I would say yes, and it is interesting that their numbers are similar, and I think we touched on this last week, that I do feel like a lot of it is the system, and so when they're bringing in goalies that are good fits for the system, I think then in turn the system helps them. But I just feel like Georgiev's a little bit more reliable. Like Kemper had those weird injuries and things that kept happening to him. And it was funny, like every time I turn on a Washington game in the beginning of the year, it was like the same kind of stuff, like getting poked in the face and yeah. the equipment, just weird stuff. So I just think he's a little less drama. I think he's a little bit more of a calming presence, and he's been healthy. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't mm-hmm. think big time knock on wood, that he hasn't been injured this year. So I just think with so much drama surrounding the team, like who's going to play and this and that, just Georgiev has been such a solid, consistent mm-hmm. presence that, and I think we talked about this before, he kind of gets overlooked a little bit for it. So for that reason, I prefer Georgiev a little bit more. And I think his advanced statistics are slightly better than Kemper's. So I think he's also proven a little that he's giving a little bit more in that area. But I think they're still comparable. But mm-hmm. yeah, I do favor Georgiev.
Yeah, they're definitely statistically comparable for sure, especially in the regular season. Excuse me. We won't know, like you previously mentioned, about Georgiev and his playoff prowess for another week's time and then some. But I will say I don't like to use this term, but I will. Like the eye test for Georgiev, it just feels like he's a lot less leaky. Like he does get beat, just like any good goaltender sometimes gets beat. But he doesn't kind of – like the ones he's supposed to stop, he does. And I don't know – and I know Kemper was injured in the playoffs, and to the eye especially can affect just how leaky a goalie is. But I felt like there was a little bit of a lack of confidence in him in some instances given that. Evan, tell me, are you – like me in the thinking that Georgiev has at least at the very least been a regular season upgrade from Darcy Kemper?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Look at the LA game. I mean, yeah. He is the reason why the Avs won that game. Simply put. So, you know, of course there is always going to be the question of, can he do it in the playoffs? I mean, we had that same question with Kemper last year, even though he'd been in the playoffs, you know, as a younger goal. I mean, he was part of that 2014 rotation against the Minnesota Wilds when the Avs got beaten 7. So, you know, it's not like he'd been there before, but it's a matter of, can he do it? Right. And I think that might be kind of the same question with Georgiev, because I don't think he played one game with the Rangers at all last year in the playoffs. Cause I think it was just stricken all the way through. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't think he has played in the playoffs like at all, like not even like coming in relief appearance, you know.
I want to say he has 4 playoff appearances, Georgiev. I want to
4?
Say, yeah, I mean,
yeah, not many, right?
No,
there's always going to be that question, but I mean, going back to the kind of the overall picture of like this team versus last year's team, they are very different, right? I mean, we already kind of touched on it. We were spoiled last year with everything. I mean, that's part of winning a championship, is you have to have all the right pieces come together at the right time. And that's what happened, right? It was, I guess, kind of fantasy land, I guess, that it all worked out perfectly the way that it did. So now this time you have to go through a little bit of intensity, a little bit of grit, go down a different route, the path less known, right?
Yeah, for us.
Exactly. I mean, it's kind of what Tampa did last year, or not last year, but their second year when they won the cup. Yeah. Exactly. They had to do it a different way. So now the Avs have to try and do it a different way. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out, of course, you know, with a different team, of course. And, you know, as Jackie already mentioned, knock on wood, it all depends on the injuries too, which I think we could also probably touch on too towards the end of the show.
For sure. Yeah, we'll definitely get to that, because I feel like that's what's most pressing heading into the playoffs. And just to correct myself, Gorgiev has two playoff appearances. He's allowed two goals in those two playoff appearances. He has one loss, and one of them didn't register as a win or a loss. So I imagine.
So then, yeah, he came in for that one game.
Exactly. So, like you said, that's essentially nothing. And I did listen to NHL satellite radio this afternoon a little bit just to see how the national folks and the North American folks are considering Gorgiev. The jury's still not out for them. They mentioned that in the Shesterkin journey was Gorgiev kind of faltering towards the end of Shesterkin was getting better. And that's kind of how Gorgiev lost the net back to Shesterkin. I don't know how I necessarily feel about that being like something that's incredibly telling, especially for a guy in that situation with a goalie who did he win the Vezina last year? Correct, Shesterkin. So when you're backing up a Vezina caliber goalie, like it's easy to say, oh, he fell off when Shesterkin was coming on. When it might have just been a lot of Shesterkin coming on. Jackie, what do you think? Is there something to take away from the Igor Shesterkin and Alexander Gorgiev dynamic and kind of how that settled? Or do you think this is a totally different situation?
Well, not like I followed the Rangers closely, but I believe that Shesterkin was seen as like a very top prospect after what he'd done in Russia. Like, I know it was like a huge deal that they even got him signed. Like, it wasn't like, oh, he was just in North America and then suddenly became good. Like, they were ready and waiting for it. So they were always going to give him the net, is my understanding of the situation. And so it was never like, we'll just see which one of these two is like the guy. I think once he came over, it was like, unless we were just totally wrong and the success doesn't translate, like, this is the guy that we're going to roll with.
Interesting.
And so, like I said, to me, it wasn't really like a competition unless like something crazy happened. So I think that that's kind of how like that played out, because it did take him a few years to come over. And so I think that was a big question, but once they finally got him to agree, and I think it was very similar story for Sorokin as well. It's like they knew once either of these guys showed up that they were going to be like a big deal.
That's interesting. I didn't really know that was, I mean, I know that Igor was pretty highly touted, but I guess I didn't really pick up on the fact that there wasn't really much of a competition, that it was kind of like, we'll see Gorgiev's contract through and we know that Shesterkin is kind of the next guy. I always kind of perceived it as a competition, but I could see based on how it settled that there's kind of proof in what you're saying. Cause I mean, obviously Shesterkin came and did his thing, but Alexander Gorgiev has the potential to do almost the very same thing this season for a different team.
I think I remember them saying once we made the trade for him that like they were even going to qualify him because they couldn't pay to keep him around as like even their backup. And so like the year previously they were willing to trade him, but they wanted more. They wanted like a first for Gorgiev and they weren't getting that. And so then it kind of came to a head the following year when they were even contemplating not even qualifying him because they couldn't pay him. And so they were kind of glad to get anything for him. So it was like one of those gambles where maybe the Avs could have waited and seen if that QO didn't happen, but that's pretty risky. Like, I don't know. They always say they're going to do that. But yeah. I remember that was the very same thing with Burakovsky as well. Like Washington was very close to not qualifying him. So it was a really like, you know, kind of a gamble there, but I mean, obviously what the Avs did was the right call, but like they were definitely done with him as I guess what I'm saying. Like they made their decision and they were never going to pay Gorgiev. So they're kind of ready to move on. Yeah.
That's right. I remember that now. I remember that when the initial trade was announced, and also the fact that I know there are at least some Ranger fans too that were upset that he wasn't sticking around. I mean, it's not like he would have started anyway, because I mean, you have Igor frickin' Shesterkin, but to have a good backup goaltender at least probably, but alas, you know, here we are.
Yeah, well, I'm just excited that Gorgiev seems to be at least heading into the playoffs. He has the potential to steal some games. We've seen it. We saw it against LA, for example, and LA might be a potential playoff matchup. So we know that he has the capability. I don't buy that he gets worse when the stakes get higher. because I can't imagine the stakes being any higher than when you're just named the starter after being traded to another team right off the bat.
And the champs.
So right. I'd imagine the expectations in his own mind are already as high as they can get. And now the bar is still there. He still has to do better than Darcy Kuemper, and Darcy Kuemper won the Stanley Cup. So he's just going to – I think that it's brought the best out of him, at least in the scenario in Colorado. And his performance has me wondering, as well as with Frankie coming back and making his return in the last game, I wonder if Georgiev could benefit from a little bit of a spell heading into round one. And I used kind of that logic to set up the poll of the week this week. And if you folks are listening or watching, please head over to Twitter and follow us at Mile High Hockey or at MHH_lab. You can find the polls on our Mile High Hockey Lab Twitter. This week's poll reads, is it more important to make sure this Avalanche team is fresh heading into the postseason, or to make a strong push for the division title and ride the wave, meaning play your starters in order to do so? Jackie, I'll start with you. What's your answer to this poll and why?
It was the go for it, but there's definitely caveats to that, I'd say. I do feel like that Nashville game, the back-to-back, they might not have much to play for in that one, so I could definitely see resting to a point. The other thing is, like, you can't, like, just pull 10 guys out of the lineup. Like,
right.
They can't even bring that many up. Yeah. Right. So it would be a few here and there. And so then, like, anybody that's dealing with something,
right,
I think you should for sure think about it. Like, would you just straight up rest, like, let's say Mikko, even if he feels decent? You know, I'm sure nobody feels amazing at this point, but, you know, like, nothing out of the ordinary. Like,
right.
And plus, you've also got to consider, like, MacKinnon and Rantanen going. They already have reached a bunch of milestones, but they could even get even further. Like, yeah. MacKinnon get the 40 goals, or, you know what I mean? Like, so it's hard to say. And, like, straight up, I wouldn't want them to just miss this week, because, like, that's too much time off. So that's why I say, like, the Nashville game for sure. If they don't, like, need those 2 points, that's probably a good one to take off. It would also be nice if they didn't even have to travel. Like, that's a back-to-back with travel. Maybe leave some people home. Yeah. But, like, Makar,
he's done. He's probably done, right?
I don't think so. I think he probably should play one.
Okay.
I don't know. It's so hard to say, because it also depends on what
he's one that takes a trip in the Nashville game to get one, and then you can rest, like, Taze, so that he gets one game. Because I feel like the defensive group is probably what needs rest more than the forward group, just based on who's in and who's out. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but the other thing that kind of intrigues me about this whole should you just rest guys now situation, which I don't necessarily think that's the best case or the best idea based on how the Avs are rolling right now, but I find it interesting. So Seattle, the Pacific division is so totally not settled, and that also includes the wild card race. So it's almost like, even if the Avs win the division, they don't really control who the matchup is going to be. It could very well be the Kings. It could
what a prize,
right? It could absolutely work that way. It could also be a case of, like, Vegas falls to 2 for whatever reason, because Vegas has back-to-back games against the Oilers, I believe. I can't remember. It's another divisional opponent to end their season. Essentially, the Kraken now are the team. It was the Winnipeg Jets a couple weeks ago. Now it's the Kraken that, depending on how they fare in the next few games, that's totally going to change the way the West sets up. So I'm super intrigued by that fact. And if that's the case, Evan, does it matter if you win the division, or should you just prioritize having fresh skaters heading into the first round?
Ooh, that's a good question. Because, I mean, I'll be straight up right now. I don't want LA. I don't want LA. I don't want them. Like, that would, I did not anticipate that happening, you know, 2 weeks ago.
Right.
So I guess to answer your question then, I wouldn't want to stop the form that they're on right now. Kind of like Jackie already mentioned, with how they're doing, with how they're rolling, keep playing the same guys, right? I mean, obviously, of course, if someone's dealing with something, then obviously pull them out, right? But you know, it's gonna be rough no matter what, right? I guess really then the question is, do you want to face a Seattle or do you want to face a Seattle / LA, or do you want to face a Dallas / Minnesota? Right.
Right.
They're
both
like
that.
That's like choosing between my children, like which one like I want and like don't want, you know. That's a really tough that's a really tough choice to make.
Yeah, and I've said before,
it's something the Avs can't do.
Right.
Like, I don't think winning the division is like the be all end all, but then it's like it's right there. Like at this point,
go for
you
it.
You have it. You don't, because like what you said, Evan, you don't want to take away your own momentum. Mm-hmm. And so
that's my vote. I feel like especially this season, given the way it's worked, we had such a they had a downturn midway through the year when McKinnon was out. And it felt like just recently they really came into and started looking, at least in terms of control of each of these games, like the team of last year, especially on the back end. But I'm going to lay out a few different division clinching scenarios and see if this, I guess, context changes your answers at all.
Yeah, so, I was going to say, do that. And then I know there's also like the clinching home ice advantage too.
That's true.
Also, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. So that'll play into what I'm about to say as well. So Minnie and Dallas should win tonight. They're both playing, I think it's Chicago and Detroit. So those are pretty winnable games for two playoff teams. That pretty much means that the Avs will have to win two of the three to at least compete for the division title with Dallas. But Dallas will have the tiebreaker if they get one more regulation win. So they'll have this tiebreaker secured. There's no way we can catch them there. So if we tie them in points, they still win the division. However, if Dallas loses two of three in regulation, the Avs will clinch with just one more victory. If Dallas wins two of three and the Avalanche would have to win two of three to clinch. And then there also comes into play overtime losses. So if Dallas can't get at least 4 points over the next three games by any means, the Avalanche will secure the division victory. And if Minnesota doesn't earn three wins in their last three games, the Avalanche will secure the second seed at least. So there's your home ice advantage, at least in the first round. What do you guys think? Does this context change your mind in any way, or does it just prove your point?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it changes much. It does seem like a lot will be known even after tonight. And like you said, you assume they'll beat the easy teams, but you also never know. Like, the Avs are pretty much definitely ahead of Minnesota at this point. Like you said, mm-hmm. Minnesota needs to win out to even be in that conversation anymore. So at this point, we're looking at the Avs 1, probably worst case scenario 2. So that's a pretty good position to be in.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like every day that goes by, we'll know a little bit more. But no, it wouldn't change much, I don't think. I'd probably like to see them still try in the next two games. I mean, one, you definitely need to have a good effort against Edmonton.
Agreed.
And two, you know, the Winnipeg game is the last home game for now. And then, like, Winnipeg still has something to play for. So I think that should be, like, a competitive game. I think the Avs should try in that one, because there's still a scenario where they could face them. So not so much, but, you know, we'll see how this week goes.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Like you say, day by day, if we could possibly find out if Sakic could utilize his contacts and get into the ear of the GM for the Detroit Red Wings, to see if we could inspire a little bit and say like, hey man, maybe I'll favor you a little bit in a trade. If you guys really bring it out, do a tribute or something to the 98 or 96 greats. And so I'm hoping that if Dallas loses tonight, this conversation really changes, because like you said, Jackie, you probably want to view Edmonton as the very last end all be all game where you are absolutely pushing yourself to win. I think, like you said, the Winnipeg game can be as important given that they are a potential playoff matchup. But at the same time, I feel like they might see themselves out before we get there. And that would change the tune for Winnipeg as well. So I think for me, this context slightly changes it. What about you, Evan?
I mean, I feel like it only proves my point kind of further of just winning out.
Oh, I just realized right? you are outside.
I know. I thought you had a background. That's how beautiful Colorado is.
It's it's beautiful up here in Fort Collins, so I decided I had to come out here.
That's awesome.
I could stay inside. But anyway, yeah, there's been a few people going back and forth behind me.
It's awesome.
But anyway, yeah, I feel like it just kind of proves my point of trying to win out, right?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, honestly, because I was talking about this with a couple of the Dallas people last night in our hockey Slack channel that we have going.
Yeah.
And comparing the Avs schedule, Dallas' schedule, and Minnesota's schedule, I honestly think the Avs have the hardest of out of the three, because the Avs have Edmonton tomorrow, Winnipeg Thursday, and then Nashville Friday. All three still in contention.
Yes.
Dallas has Detroit tonight, obviously, and then St. Louis twice. But it's on a back to back. Yeah. And right. So both like traveling, all that stuff. So that could play a role perhaps. And then Minnesota has, who did they have? They had Chicago, Winnipeg, and Nashville again. Right. So, I mean, I'd probably say out of the easiest, I would probably go like Dallas, Minnesota, Colorado, I would say, mm-hmm. in that order, like top to bottom. So that means
those easy teams aren't always so easy, like we saw
exactly
last night.
Oh, I know. So that's what we're hoping for, right? Is that there is a slip up, like the Avs almost had against Anaheim. Mm-hmm. So you know you got to hope that St. Louis will do something. I mean, St. Louis has had such a down year that I feel like they're going to be pesky with Dallas.
I do too. Like last bit of pride.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
They don't like Dallas either.
Jordan Binnington's going to go out with one last hurrah.
It's possible.
By chucking his stick at somebody. there's that. And then obviously, you know, Minnesota is still, they still at least, even though they have to win out to win the division, they're still going to want home ice advantage for sure.
Right.
So I feel like realistically right now, like obviously winning the division would be huge for the Avs. I feel like falling to third, because that seems really hard to do right now.
Yeah.
That would be, you know, devastation.
That would be worst case scenario. That would mean Minnesota wins out and we basically only win a game.
Exactly. So it's
or not that.
This week is already huge in and of itself. I mean, I feel like after tonight, especially with Dallas's game, that'll be a big, you know, determination, especially after tomorrow night's game against Edmonton. That's also going to be a huge determination. It's going to come down to the wire. And I think I'll also add on to this, because that the Friday when we play Nashville, right, the Avs are one of two games that night. And I think the other game is like two teams from the East Coast. I think it might be like Columbus and like Philly or something like that, like a game that doesn't matter. So with the Avs playing that Friday night and with Nashville possibly out of the picture by that point, you know, Jackie already mentioned, you know, Nashville could be, you know, just resting guys, go into the off season, be healthy, rolling into next season. But then the Avs will also know coming in what they have to do, right? Like
right.
if both Dallas and the Avs are tied on, how many points would that be? 106, 108, something like that. You know, then the Avs know, okay, we have to at least get a point out of this game, at least send it to overtime, right? Just get something out of it. Because, I mean, Dallas is going to have that tiebreaker. That's kind of the unfortunate part about all of this.
Right.
And, you know, even it's crazy. I don't know. I was reflecting back on this earlier. It is crazy that Dallas has the tiebreaker for regulation wins. That they
with
also
all
have
those like overtime.
Like 16 overtime losses. Like that's ridiculous.
Absolutely.
So I'm gonna be watching particularly tomorrow night, of course. It'll help that it'll be right in front of me, quite literally. Thank you, Adrian.
Yeah.
I'll be watching Friday's game too, depending on how scenarios lay out. So those are my two must watches for the rest of this week.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, just to re-elaborate, I guess is the word
reiterate.
I'm trying. Reiterate. There's the word. Thank you, Jackie. Jeez, you're the host today. So just to reiterate my point with Seattle, which is funny if you think about this, Seattle could become the third in the Pacific and then play Edmonton in the first round, which I don't know if you want to do that, Seattle. Seattle could stay right where they are, but Edmonton could beat Vegas and win the West and then play them anyway. They could play Vegas, or they could be where they are and play or get passed up, and which they would probably won't get passed up. So they're pretty much on a trip to Vegas or Edmonton as it sits. So have fun choosing between that. And the Avs have a choice between what feels like LA, Winnipeg, maybe Calgary. They're hanging on by a thread, and then Dallas or Minnesota, I guess. Because I feel like Minnesota is a three. That's where they're going to be. They're not going to have home ice, so that sucks for them. Happy about it for me. And I just I really like the. I know we don't want the Kings, but that has a potential to be like a classic series if the Avs played the Kings in the first round, and the Avs played the Kings in a Stanley Cup season in the playoffs before. So there would be some history to it as well. Go ahead, Ev.
Yeah, I was going to make a point because I glossed over my mind when I was going on my rant. But Vegas, I was actually standing watching last night, and I actually didn't realize that the Avs are only 3 points behind Vegas. Mm-mm. I thought it was like five or something.
And that's another scenario, I guess. The Avs could steal the West.
I know,
which would mean that we would play. So basically, it's there for them, for Seattle. It's Avs, Vegas, or Edmonton. That's mm-hmm. yikes. Big yikes.
That's a big yikes for Seattle. But, yeah. I mean, to go back to Avs and Vegas in the West, I mean, if the Avs manage to somehow leapfrog Vegas, wild, ridiculous. I mean,
yeah,
that would be unbelievable.
Only in a season like this. Yeah, only in a season where Boston sets the record for wins in a single season would Jared Bednar not be considered for the Jack Adams Trophy with what he's done with this season. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they wouldn't, though. It's sad.
I know, right?
It's like, even though the Jack Adams is kind of a curse, so
yeah,
we're doing fine without it, but okay. Like, they wouldn't even consider it, even if it wasn't that. It's just crazy. Like, you either have to have a new coach or have some, like, miracle team, which is usually miracle goaltending. That's the joke. Like, you just sort by even strength save percentage, and like there's your
Jack Adams
award winner.
Here, I'm actually going to look really quickly because I want to see what Vegas's last games are. I can't remember. And if I remember correctly, I remember seeing it somewhere. It was, I think the Avs have to win out and then Vegas has to drop, I think, one or two games.
So that's what I was trying to think of. It's Seattle and Vegas for their last two games of their season. So, like, Seattle could win both of those games.
That'd be crazy.
And steal a spot. And basically, if Edmonton wins inside that two games, they could give Edmonton the division title. And then if they beat the Knights both times, the Avs could potentially still – like, it's just so up in the air still, and it's game 79. So,
yeah,
I don't know what that says. Maybe that says the format is right. I don't know. It seems like
it's a credit to Bettman that there's still like eight different scenarios.
Right. Because that's everyone's like, Boston and Tampa and Toronto has been predetermined. Okay, well, Boston won got 180,000 points. So calm down. Like, that's not because of the format. That's because we're seeing one of the most legendarily successful regular seasons, the most legendarily successful regular season of all time. And that's what
happened. It's so boring that like 2 and 3 are just predetermined regardless.
Yeah.
Like,
if 2 and 3 would beat the Bruins.
Like, I almost think like Tampa should have just tanked out into a wild card. I think that was one of the questions last week. Like, should Winnipeg have tanked to tank out of a, I forget exactly what the scenario was, but to set their matchup. And it's like, if anybody would ever consider that kind of scenario, I would think Tampa tank out to the wild card and then play the other division, because they wouldn't play Boston. They play the Atlanta or the Metro winner, which we still don't even know who that's going to be.
Right. So
the craziness of the East.
Yeah, exactly. The crazy, I mean, the craziness of the East and the likelihood of seeing Toronto potentially lose to Tampa in the first round again is going to be must watch TV. I don't know if it's going to happen again.
I think Tampa will finally lose. Yeah. They've been so bad. Like, I saw something about the second half of the season. Like, they've been in the group with, like, Vancouver. Like, they just haven't even been good this whole second half.
Right.
So maybe their time's come.
I'm sure we're going to have a whole playoffs preview show next week.
Exactly.
Over all of it. And I have thoughts and opinions on that. So,
well, that's a good segue.
Yep, that's a good save for later.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a good segue because I want to talk a little bit about playoff performers last season that we didn't expect. And I wanted to see if the two of you have a take on who we might see be have kind of unexpected performances, maybe get some clutch goals or maybe some clutch defensive play that maybe Avalanche fans aren't currently expecting. Jackie, I'll start with you. Who's on that list for you?
Pretty much like anyone outside the top line, right? Would be sort of that secondary unexpected. I really think this year might be more like the defense. Mm-hmm. I think aside from Makar, nobody's really thought of as like critical scoring. And I think, you know, like Byron would be someone that I'd, because he didn't even
Not
score
you.
A goal last, of course, I was yeah. but he didn't
no,
score
I see
a goal
it.
Last
yeah.
playoff. So
but he produced pretty well.
Yeah, yeah, but he was, and then, so the goal scoring has been there for him this year. So I would say like him scoring a few goals is maybe something that people don't expect, at least in a playoff context. Yeah. But I think also like what Taze and Gerard are able to do offensively, I think is probably something a little unexpected that could make a big difference.
Yeah, I'm with you on Byram. That was my first thought because, like you said, Makar is like your first thought when you think of offensive production from the back end. But I think we have seen Byram, obviously, in that he's got 10 goals this season. We've seen him kind of find – I think he's always had the shot. I just feel like he's gotten better at knowing when to use it. And
yeah.
And we've seen that just in his stat line. I think the same is honestly true about a guy that stood out in in last year's postseason, JT Compher, and the one before, really. He's obviously producing more. He's in a larger role in terms of ice time, and you know he's sometimes on the power play and stuff like that. What is your expectation for JT Compher, Evan, heading into the playoffs this season? Are you expecting him to kind of fulfill that 2C, or is it going to be more of the same kind of where he's just on the brink of that?
Yeah, I think is I know you put it in our script, and I knew exactly what route you were going down here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he is that's his expectation now is to perform, put points on the board, mm-hmm. because that's what he's done this season, right? And so, therefore, why would it be any different in the playoffs, right? In fact, it's more important in the playoffs. So, you know, that's now his role, right? I guess he's kind of turned into the, for lack of a better phrasing, the Nazem Kadri role, in doing that. And so now, who's coming in to fill JT? I would hope it would be Alex Newhook. Yep. I mean, that's just kind of how I feel like the lineage kind of goes with that. But I also want to watch like other forwards. I really want to see what Evan Rodriguez can do, mm-hmm. just because he has been so cold this second half of the season. If he can warm it up and do really well in the playoffs, I mean, especially if Landeskog, I feel like, comes back, if those two are on a line together, mm-hmm. I think that would be excellent. I think that would really bring out the best out of Evan. And I mean, I'd also maybe look at like a Dennis Mulgan perhaps, from like the fourth line. If that so happens to work out. So, I mean, there's lots of different players that you can look at. I guess I'm looking more at kind of the forwards than the defense, just because mm-hmm. the defense is still the same as it has been on last season in the cup run. Of course, you know, just dependent on injuries, if Manson comes back and Makar coming back and all of that jazz. So I don't know if I really wanted to be bold, Curtis McDermott, Stanley Cup final game seven overtime goal. But no,
yeah, that's if crazy. They get to if they get to the Stanley Cup final, needing to play him
will be a disaster.
And they haven't been eliminated. That would it's a miracle. Be, like, the biggest story.
Do you believe in miracles? Yes. Well, you mentioned Evan Rodriguez and Alex Newhook, and they stick out in my mind in terms of potential unexpected playoff performers. Jackie, what will that look like for Alex Newhook? Does he have to get on the score sheet early in the series, or is it more about like a timely goal for him?
Yeah, that's interesting to really try to articulate the expectations. Right. I mean, like an important goal would be huge. But we hope for that for everybody, everyone to have that kind of moment.
I will say, I think it's probably more important for him to do something in this playoffs than most guys on the roster, because he has to bargain for himself, I guess, or I don't know, stick up for himself going into negotiations, I suppose.
I almost feel he's kind of set in a range. It's probably like between 2 to 3 million. I don't know there's anything unless he just completely goes crazy that's going to change it. I do say it's important for him for like his reputation, because I think if he doesn't do much, he's really going to get, you know, a lot of crap from fans, I think, and media. And so and I guess that's its own debate. Like, does it really matter what other people think? Like, I think the team and Bednar and everything, I don't think that it's going to fluctuate as much in that regard. And so it's more like outside opinion, but for him, it would be nice to have that huge moment. I mean, just because Byron didn't score a goal. I mean, you heard about it all summer, like, oh, he's never going to score. His shot's not good. I mean, it's just, it's crazy what perceptions are set by what happens in the playoffs. And so, yeah, it can be really disappointing. Like a huge goal would be nice. Like a few points each series would, I guess what I'm hoping for, like if he could get like 3 points a series, I would be pretty happy with it, I think.
That makes sense to me. Yeah. I my thing with Newhook is that I feel as though the playoffs could be the time for him. Not necessarily stylistically, because it seems like he's struggled sometimes in the playoffs. I mean, I think he got healthy scratched a couple times to start last year.
Yeah.
So I feel like what it really comes down to is how much Bednar trusts him in terms of that and in terms of his two-way abilities, because you can't really be a liability even if you are somebody who can score. Like, if that comes at a cost, I feel like this time of year Bednar really has a sensitivity to that. So I think in these last few games this is going to be important for Newhook and for Evan Rodriguez, who we previously mentioned, just to kind of solidify themselves in terms of their role in the eyes of their coaching. We also saw Frankie come back. How do you feel he'll play into the postseason? Is this one of those situations where if Frankie plays, the less Frankie plays in the postseason, the better?
I mean, probably. We don't want anything to happen to George.
Yeah.
Of course.
Because if you see your backup come in, that means your starter's struggling, right? Which is worst case scenario in the playoffs. So
I think it could have been more of like a try to mix them more like on purpose if Frankie hadn't have missed like this last chunk.
Gotcha.
Because I think they were kind of going to more of a split. I think we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. Jordy's still the starter in name, but it's a little bit closer to split. But I think that's out the window now. Like, they're just going to totally run with Jordy, which is fine. But I think, like, if they really had Frankie rolling, that would have been a little bit more of a luxury, where I think maybe they would have tried to use him maybe here and there a little bit more. I know it's tough in the playoffs because it is a lot about momentum, but it does also seem like Georgie needs his mental rest from time to time. And if they just were a little bit more comfortable, I think with really going with Frankie, that could have been more of an option.
Fair enough. It is. I still think it's important for the confidence of a starting goaltender to know Frankie's behind you in a playoff series. So that's. I agree with you, though. Like, given this situation and how he came back, it doesn't feel like it's really a 1A, 2A, or 2A situation. And I don't think it ever really was, although Frankie is near and dear to us here on this program and to all of Avalanche fandom, but I think he's just a legendary backup, and there's really nothing wrong with that. Probably the best backup in Avalanche history. Whoa, said it. But ooh, I think it might be the truth, especially if they win a cup this year and he plays a role like he did in the last Stanley Cup run where he had again, to spell Kemper because of injury. I don't think there's much of an argument to be made, but let's move on to our open-ended segment. And we kind of touched on a little bit of injuries earlier and how that might play into this. So, Jackie, do you have any injury updates for us heading into tomorrow's game against the Oilers?
Sure, yeah, we can run it down. I know Evan put up a piece on the site.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So there's that to look at, too, if anyone's listening.
I was going to say, there's your reference, Jackie.
Yeah.
The most positive, I'd say, was Byron skated today.
Right.
Nobody else did. He was the only one, which that in itself was kind of interesting. So I think that is very positive. Like, I think
he looks
be possible that he could play tomorrow. Like, that's the reason why you'd get out there. Like, I think everyone has the day off. And so I think for him to really want to get on the ice and get, you know, get moving again would mean that he's not, like, really trying to do that tomorrow. So then I think it's on the table he plays, but obviously it depends what the
It depends on how he feels.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought it was really good that he was out there. So
And I mean, the Avs got back at like 2 a.m. too.
So yeah. Yeah.
I don't blame them for not wanting to go. But
No. It probably was their day off, like, for sure, which makes it even more interesting that he really wanted to get out there and get on the ice today. So I think that's positive. Makar, we haven't really heard anything. Like, you know, the coverage was pretty dark while they were in California, so I don't know. I don't really understand that, but that's how it was. But
in Evan's article, he said that the injury was described as no timeline for return.
Well, okay,
and I think that sounds more ominous than
add on to it? Yeah, because I was gonna say, because who was it? I think both Kyle Fredrickson of the Gazette and then Bennett Durando from Denver Post were both out there in LA for like the last half. And they had then asked Bednar, and I think Bednar had considered it day to day now at this point. And I was watching the TNT feed last night, and they had a quick shot of Makar before the game. Who was in the bench, on the bench, you know, no like pads or jersey on, nothing like that. But he was doing just some puck work from the bench. So, I mean, his hands are fine, as we already knew that, but
which is good. We still
have
those.
Of course. Yeah. So who knows really? So I guess I would consider him more day to day at this point.
Evan, tell me about what you've seen from Arturi Lehkonen. I know he's been on the ice a lot, but he hadn't been on the ice with a stick in his hand up until recently. What's your evaluation of what we've seen from him?
Yeah, I was going to say he came back last week with his stick in his hand for the first time. I mean, he's been non-contact this entire time still. We're coming up on that, I believe, now 4 or 5 week kind of timeline in that 4 to 6 week recovery for that broken thumb. I mean, like everybody else, he was with the team, traveled with them, did all of that. So, I mean, I think Bednar too had commented that he would like to have him try and come and play one or two games this week. But I think if he's still non-contact by now, I think he would have to go non-contact. Or I think he'd have to be in a contact jersey by tomorrow, probably like at morning skate. To then be considered maybe for one of those two games against Winnipeg or Nashville.
That's kind of the situation for Lehkonen too, right? Like Bednar mentioned wanting to see him play at least potentially this week before season's end. Jackie, what do you think in terms of the Josh Manson situation? He seems like the kind of guy who really needs a couple of games to like get up to speed. Maybe not like in terms of his physicality or anything like that, but I feel like when he first came to Colorado, he struggled with the system itself. I don't know if that's changed or if it is something where like playing in it is really important to maintain it. What do you think?
I think it's more because like he missed a lot of time. Like he was only back, I think, for 6 games or something like that. So if you think about it, he's basically been out since the beginning of December.
Yeah.
Except for that little return. that gets a little bit concerning because you really want him at like full go, like, you know, like Lekkonen's somebody that's been able to skate and everything, and so it's just kind of like about how the finger feels or like how much pain he's going to tolerate. Like Manson, you have to be really concerned about like conditioning, game shape, and right. skating shape, and it's going to be hard to like throw that in there in the playoffs, especially when you're realistically taking like Jack Johnson out of the lineup, who's been pretty solid since mm-hmm. he's come back. And so it's like, how good does Manson have to be to be better than Johnson at this point? And yeah. so that one's really iffy also just because like he's missed so much time. You don't know how, like he has skated, I think, with the team for about maybe a week, maybe 10 days, but it's not every day. Mm-hmm. I think there was one day last week that everybody, like even Landy, skated and then he didn't. And so it's still kind of on that, like, not really ramping it up stage. So that's a real tricky one where I don't think he's going to make the beginning of the playoffs. And it's like, when is the right time to throw him in? Because I think mm-hmm. he'll get there, especially if he's been on the ice for like a week or two at this point. I think he's like getting better. But that one's a real tough one to peg, I'd say.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately for Darren Helm, it's starting to feel like, and Evan, you also wrote this in your article, that they might just shut him down for the year based on his age and just the flurry of injuries he's dealt with this season. You also mentioned that Ben Myers and Dennis Malgin kind of proved that they're going to be really important pieces in the event that Helm doesn't make his return. Is that just the prognosis for you with Helm, that he's just probably done for the year unless maybe late in the postseason?
I mean, I think that's me looking in, because I think out of everybody on that list that I published today, mm-hmm. There's been no updates on Helm other yeah. than the fact that it was announced at the same time as Makar's injury that, you know, lower body, no timeline to return. So, I mean, the fact that we haven't heard anything from him or about him, you know, for the last second half of this trip, and the fact of his age and, you mm-hmm. know, what he can bring to the team, and, you know, having only played what, not even 15, 20 games.
It's 11. I think it's 11
yeah,
total.
Exactly. 11 games. Like, that's hard for a 36-year-old center to come back from and
snap into it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's yeah. tough because the Makar things does seem more precautionary. Like, I don't think it's just rest. I think there is something wrong, but it's like, even the national manageable. Media is starting to mention yeah. a little bit that it's not something like anyone's really worried about. And so mm-hmm. the fact that they went out at the same time, I guess you could say, well, what if he's in the same boat as that? But
yeah,
just given that like nobody bothered to clarify about him and his age and that he's barely played this season, that it probably isn't just the same sort of precautionary right. thing that's happening. And so hopefully yeah. with them
as much
being
as we
at
wish.
Home,
yeah,
we can get a little bit more clarity. I know they hate updates, but I just think it's like, it's unfair to the fans. I think it's unfair to the players. Like, just let people know where these guys are at. Like, if mm-hmm. he's basically being shut down, just like tell people that. And so it's not fair to just keep asking about him if it's like, he's not really making a comeback at this point. So hopefully we find out, but yeah, I agree with you. I think, I haven't really counted on anything for Helm this season, mm-mm. and probably shouldn't expect to come back.
Well,
it's,
you know,
such a shame too. I mean,
yeah, I what mean, you're describing is we're reading between the lines pretty much in his situation, yeah. which yep. it's in like Evan, you mentioned his age and stuff, and it's kind of an easy thing to do. So that is unfortunate. And speaking of reading between the lines, Landeskog still hasn't skated with the team. But he has been skating for almost a month now, I feel like.
He skated with the team at
Eight
points.
Weeks.
Yeah, but nothing.
not okay. He skated yeah. with the team, but not full on.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's still in a red jersey, obviously. And so it's pretty clear he's not coming back in the regular season. It's also been rumored by people that I don't consider reputable sources that he's not going to make it into the first round. Either do you think that that's true, and if that is the case, do the Avalanche save him for like a game 5 in the second round, or do you want him right away in the first or in the second round?
I'm going to, okay. Because, you know, I saw those same reports and I was like, I don't know about that. And I think it could kind of go for everybody on this list. I know. Like, I think I feel like it could go for anybody on this list.
Yeah.
When it becomes playoff hockey, it's freaking playoff hockey, and you're going to want to be with your team and help your team in any way you can.
Yeah.
And so with that being said, I feel like that these guys on the, you know, of course, depending on like how they actually are, of course, like Helm, maybe not on that list, but like everyone else, I feel like they would probably push it to play in the playoffs because agreed. It's the NHL playoffs. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would dare to say that Landeskog will be back for game one of the first round.
I hope that's the case. I still think it'll be game five. I still think it'll be game five. Yeah. I think the first round will prove a little more difficult than we imagine, and it'll be perfect to insert him into the swing game of the series, get one for captain at home, and win game six and call it cool.
Yeah, I mean, that would be why he'd show up, because it would be harder, right? I mean, it's a different team, as we've already said. Yeah. You know, get a dollar every single time we say it in this episode. But, you know, I don't know about you guys. I would call Landeskog probably at like 70% at most, maybe closer to 60.
What do you think, Jack?
Yeah, I was going to ask what you guys think.
Probably don't want to hear my thoughts here, because I've like been 10? More on the pessimistic side of this Landy thing. And I totally agree. Like, and even Friedman said this on his show, like, you can't ever rule out a hockey player just saying like, I have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally believe that he would be the kind of person that
would do it.
But like, he hasn't played all year is the problem. Like somebody in Lekkonen's situation says, okay, it's playoffs. It's game one. I'm playing. Like, right. I've healed enough. Let's do this. And like I said, I'm not even sure Manson could be at the point where he's just like, this is good enough. I'm going out there. So Landy, it's just so tough because you can't miss an entire year. And it's like, okay, he's definitely going to be better than whoever he's replacing. So that's not a question, but it's just like what you're able to do, the conditioning, you just don't know. And that's like a problem. Like, he hasn't even been close to it. Like, he hasn't had a full team practice or full contact. Like, he's still doing just a couple basic drills and then getting off the ice. And so at this point, I've always felt like nobody really has the answers. Like, he's 8 weeks into just like rehabbing, and he's not even getting into like game condition and like game speed. And so I just don't think it's a matter of will, unfortunately. And like I said, I totally believe if it was about will, he would do it. But like, his body just isn't there. And I think like, that's a concern, because it just seems like they don't know what to do to get it to that point. And I thought it was really interesting that Bednar mentioned that the skate cut that he had, I don't know if we've talked about this, from the bubble series, and Bednar randomly mentioned this. So that kind of maybe started it. And you got to wonder, like, is it maybe like loss of feeling, loss of strength, like something isn't returning the way it's supposed to. And I know I don't want to get all conspiracy and like dash everyone's hopes. Like, it would be awesome if he just suddenly showed up. But I just think like, this is a really tough situation. And so I'm not going to say it's not going to happen at all, but you just really need to see progress to really believe it's going to happen.
I guess my question after you say that is, if that's true, no one knows that more than the organization, right? That he's way further away than we're being told. If anyone knows that, it's Joe Sakic and Jared Bednar. So my feeling, and Chris McFarland, my feeling is, if that were the case, I guess it's more of a question, would we see some of the progression we've seen from him in terms of taking trips with the team? Like, what would be the point if they're basically like, in their mind, he's pretty much done. But there is it a matter of keeping him as a potential play so that teams have to potentially prepare for him? Because I almost feel like it would be better to tell your team, what they're going to be getting into rather than drag it on. You know what I mean?
Sure. And I also think it's not something you can 100% rule out either. Like, yeah.
No, for sure.
Like, it might suddenly like take a step and take another step. I think he went on the team on the trip because everybody did. Like they said, they took a mm-hmm. bunch of staff. I just think it was like the last road trip. Everyone gotcha. Was coming. It's good for him to be around the team. You know, they needed to win those games to be there for Miko and McKinnon's milestones. So for that reason, I think it made sense that he went. I don't think he went because he was like close.
Gotcha.
And also to skate more with like the staff and everything probably was helpful, but okay. It just seems like the sense that nobody really knows. I don't think the organization knows for sure he's not playing, but it's also true in the playoff times, why do you want your opponent to know either way either? Yeah. So they probably will keep it pretty coy even if yeah. they feel like he's not anywhere close either.
Yeah. Well, speaking of keeping it coy and not being anywhere near close, it's bold prediction time.
That was a good transition. I like that one.
So last week, Evan, your bold prediction, you said that Andrew Cogliano would score 2 goals, and that was... Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry, but you were close.
I was close. I was going to say I did get that like it would be a gritty game in L.A. and that you'd have to fight for a win, and they did that. And I just picked the wrong guy to score 2 goals. I was almost there.
You just picked the wrong guy to score 2 goals. I wish you could write into like betting sites and say, God, I just picked the wrong guy. Curtis McDermott to start the game. Jackie, your prediction was that Alex Newhook would get a game-winning goal. But if I remember correct, you started it with just a goal.
I was going to say, and it was going to be the game-winning goal. I think it was the second goal in L.A., and when the Avs gave up one, I was like, oh, he's got the game-winning goal right now.
Right.
So, well, it was close.
I'll give you the ding, and I'll give you the buzzer. Because you were right about your first one. You thought he was going to get a goal, but you were like, I don't think that's bold enough. I think he's going to get a game-winner. Yeah. But
it didn't feel bold enough, but he hadn't scored in like 20 games. So it was right. – I think it does deserve a little credit, but yeah. Like
getting him to score in and of itself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm happy he did. I'm happy.
Being the game-winning goal would have been nice, though. Yeah. I was like, oh, come on. He had it. He was right there.
Yeah.
Who scored the third goal? Thank you to whoever instead. I forget who it was.
Third goal. Hunt? Was it Hunt?
Yes. Thank you, Brad.
Brad Hunt, which another one. I bet MGM did. I just picked the wrong guy. It was Brad Hunt that was going to score. Yeah,
I said that's a bold prediction right there.
Yeah. So Jacob mentioned that JoJo was going to get a shutout, but that guy did not end up playing for the Colorado Avalanche, so that was not a correct bold prediction. So that leads us to this week's round of bold predictions, and I will let Jackie do the honors. Jackie, what's your bold prediction?
Let's see. My bold prediction is that McKinnon and Ranton will outscore double what McDavid and Draisaitl score.
This week?
Yeah. I mean, in the game that they play each other.
Okay,
yeah.
So they double up point total-wise the matchup of Draisaitl and McDavid. I like that one.
I would love that.
You know, I wonder if Makar is day-to-day and if you want to see where he's at, if you bring him back against the Oilers. And even if that means playing him a little less than you would typically in that game, but just to see exactly where he's at, I don't necessarily think that that's a bad idea. But we can talk about that next time.
I'd be worried about one Evander Kane.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But it would give him like a week off if it's still doesn't feel amazing, it would give him maybe like a week off. So exactly. I think that's a fair theory there.
Yeah. Okay. And then Evan, let's hear your almost bold prediction.
you're already calling it for me. I appreciate it. I'm debating of going down one or two routes. There's a good route and there's a bad route. But I'm gonna go down the good route and I'll save the bad route for the omens. To just take that one away from me and flush it out of my mind.
Gotcha.
I already talked about him a little bit in this show, talking about wanting to see him perform and, you know, put some points on the board and really get going, especially because in the playoffs, I'll be looking for him to perform. This man goes by Evan. No, not me. Evan Rodriguez. I say he gets at least 1 point in every game this week.
In every game.
Wow. Yeah.
I won't say goal or assist.
Okay, even a point. I'll just say
3-game point streak, basically.
Yeah.
And the season.
I would go a long way with confidence. I would totally accept that, and that would help with his contract talks too.
Exactly. Good point. Well, that leaves just me, since I'm going to participate this week, since it's just the three of us, and I haven't thought about this at all. But I will say my bold prediction is that the Colorado Avalanche win the Central Division and the Edmonton Oilers win the Western Conference. That's my
prediction. Wow.
The second half of that is definitely bold.
That, like, contradicts mine, kind of.
So Oilers win West, Avs win Central. So
I can already hear Oiler fans. Oh, we won the West. We're so much better than you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Avs Twitter, you know what gift to send. I'm just saying. You know what gift to send.
You know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Just do it and send it fast. And yes, that was a good goal. No, that wasn't a high stick. And how dare you Canadians challenge that? How dare you? That is not in the spirit of the sport you invented. Come on, goal's a goal. Anyway, thank you folks so much for tuning in. This has been the Mile High Hockey Lab. I'm Adrian Hernandez. I'm here with Jackie K and Evan Liu. We have been talking Colorado Avalanche hockey. If you enjoy this broadcast, please don't forget to like and subscribe, share with your fellow Avalanche fans, and head over to Spotify, iTunes, and Audible, as every single broadcast is available in its recorded form via your favorite podcast platform. We got Avs and Oilers coming up tomorrow night. You know, we've laid it out, the Draisaitl and McDavid versus MacKinnon and Rantanen show, but in reality, there are four lines of forwards and three lines of defenders, and that's really what it comes down to, especially against a team like the Avs. So hopefully the Avs can come out on top, and hopefully Dallas loses to Detroit tonight and the Wild lose to Chicago. We're signing off from the Mile High Hockey Lab. Go Avalanche.
Mile High Hockey Lab.